Joining us now on the Schneider Orange Hotline, our Green and Gold analyst Paul Immig is here. Paul, how you doing?
Hey, Bill. Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I know you're a basketballophile. Give me your thoughts on the Bucks real quick.
This is amazing to watch. I mean, it really, really is. I'm a lifelong Wisconsin kid. I've seen so much. So much bad Bucks basketball, Bill, that, you know, short of when I was in high school and they had their 2001 run, short of that, I mean, and by the way, I'm a guy that, like, throughout all of the misery has gone to, like, 10 games a year. You know, there was a short period of time there where before I covered Packers, I covered Bucks, but in between there and before that and after that, I mean, I've invested more time and I guess money in a lot of ways in watching bad basketball, and it's, you know, this is the unexpected, quicker culmination of all of that than I think anybody expected. I mean, when the season started, I think we all thought, oh, you know, Budenholzer is going to really help. Jason Kidd was terrible. And this should, you know, the new coach should help. Budenholzer had a good track record coming from Atlanta. Giannis should only be improving. You know, but no way you're thinking NBA championship. Now, I'm getting very greedy, and I have my sights set, you know what I'm trying to say.
I know.
On an NBA Finals appearance for the Bucks, and I just, the fact that that thought can even realistically cross into any of our minds, I think is incredible at how far they've come so quickly. And last night, just another example. I mean, Bill, we talked about this briefly last Friday, like, you know, we talked a little bit about NBA and the Bucks, and we thought you really got a split in Boston. They're coming back 3-1. I mean, what? So, that's just, I guess, my brief aside. But it's they're playing so well, and I think I was watching live last night when after the game, Charles Barkley came on TNT and said, the Milwaukee Bucks are winning the NBA championship.
Right.
And it's like, oh, my gosh. And Barkley's, you know, he's had some out there comments. But, I mean, the fact that you can say that and say it with a straight face and believe it and actually give, like, validation and proof as to why that might be the case, it is incredible. And it's really been an interesting ride, and I guess 7 down, 9 to go is the catchphrase, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to believe that in 9 games, you know, Bucks need to go a couple of games over 500 from here on out.
Right.
Think about that.
Against some really, really, really good competition, but nonetheless, you have home court advantage throughout the whole thing. So no matter who you're facing, you're starting and ending the series at Fiserv if it goes 7. It's been a heck of a run, and you just don't want it to stop anytime soon. I guess to be playing basketball in June too, I mean, it would be, I mean,
oh, absolutely,
unheard of in my lifetime. And anybody who's under the age of, when's the last time the Bucks have played a basketball game in June? Like 1970?
Yeah, 72?
So,
maybe?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, something like that.
That's a long, long time to not play a basketball game in June. So, what a ride so far.
And even then, I don't think they were playing into June. Did they? Was it an 82 game season then?
Yeah, good question. I don't know.
I don't even think
not
it was then.
Good enough of a historian there to know that.
So let's move on over to the Green Bay Packers. Busy day on that 90-man offseason roster. The Packers get wide receiver Jahl Davis from waivers from the Giants. Remember, he's a Bethune-Cookman guy, which is the same place Nick Collins came from, as a matter of fact.
That's the first thought I had was Bethune-Cookman.
Right.
Oh, my gosh, Nick Collins.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So they've been kind of shuffling the bottom of that roster, trying to find a couple of diamonds in the rough, I guess. Obviously, they're trying to get everybody in the right place, right time. Mike Clemens was in here yesterday for a very lengthy period of time talking about how things have changed in Green Bay, everything from the paint to the turf to the field. You know, so does it feel like whatever – the best way I can describe it is there was this old stale odor, not that it was bad, it was just you knew what it was when you walked through the door, to there's this big, deep breath of something different now. Does it feel that way?
Well, I think that's interesting. And I do think, no matter what angle you look at it, that it got stale with Mike McCarthy. And I don't want to say it's not his fault, because, of course, it's his show, or it was his show. But, I mean, 13 years is just too damn long. You just cannot, I don't think, unless you are Bill Belichick, and he's not the exception to the rule. He's like the exception to the exception. He's just so on a different plane that you can never really realistically compare anybody to Bill Belichick. Short of that, you just can't spend so much time in one place. And so, especially when the GM for the whole time was one guy, with the exception, of course, of McCarthy's last year with Gutekunst, but him and Ted Thompson, you know, it's a long time, and so much changes. And I would say, and I know there's, you know, conflicting thoughts to this, you know, some people who disagree with it, but I do think, you know, Mike McCarthy kind of got left behind a little bit as the NFL evolved, and I do think it relied too much on one-on-one matchup wins from his wide receivers in an era where you saw great advanced level scheming to get guys open. Then you can kind of get down to the other things. It's like, well, you know, if you're Mike McCarthy and you're entering your 10th year, 11th year, 12th year, 13th year of running the program, I don't think you're going to walk into your office one day and say, hey, we need to change the carpet. We need to change the art on the wall. We need to change the way we do this. I mean, he would make annual little tinkers. You know, I remember one year you show up to practice and all of a sudden there's snacks on the sideline during practice. And there's a whole new initiative about, oh, you know, you got to give the guys, you know, fruit snacks, you know, to hide, right. You know, to kind of stay. And then the next year you come back and they're blaring music and they're doing like these simulated timeouts because, hey, that's what it would feel like if you were in a game, right? You got it. So there's always was little changes, like little tinkers to the overall operation. But, you know, when you're in one place for that long, you're never going to make wholesale changes. Would be very odd for, I think, someone to do that. And now you do have a fresh guy to come in. I mean, how with the floor being 39, I mean, he was pretty much, you know, fresh out of college when Mike McCarthy was hired. I mean, that's how much time has passed since the Packers had a new coach. And I, you know, for the guys who have been in that locker room a long time, and there's really not many of them, Rodgers, Crosby, I mean, Mike Daniels at year 8 is probably up there. Brian Bulaga's been there, what, now 9-10 years?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of guys with a lot of tenure there, but I'm sure for them, and I'm sure some of them were kind of, I would assume, taken aback a little bit by, like, whoa, this is different. But I couldn't imagine, for me personally, it not to be invigorating to see something different. So, these are all little things. Like, you know, we can talk X's and O's, or you can talk sort of culture changes, and all we can really rely on right now is culture changes, and I think it's pretty fascinating to see how maybe counter to what McCarthy was doing that LaFleur is now doing, and he's putting a stamp on it, that's for sure.
Real quick before I let you go, as Mike had reported yesterday, LaFleur didn't let the media in right away. He didn't want to do, you know, the drills and you know, run 11 on 11. He just wanted guys right place and right time, so he wasn't going to open that up to the media because he's not showing plays. He's just merely showing guys where they need to be and how they need to be there and stop. You know, they're not going to do all the drills. Does it seem like the right approach, but is it just different? Do you get it and kind of go, oh, okay, I see which direction he's going?
Yeah, I think a lot of times, and there's two different schools of thought to it, is, you know, Bobby Knight who would say, I'm trying to recall, when, like, hey, we can tell him exactly what we're going to run, and as long as we execute it better, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's one school of thought. The other is secrecy, 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 and, you know, you want everything to be unveiled as slowly as possible. What year was it, Bill? Maybe 20... What year did the Packers open on the road against Seattle? It was 2013, 2014, yeah. Somewhere around there. And this was the offseason. Ooh, it was such a big secret that Dom Capers was going to switch the Packers maybe to a 4-3 front. And, oh, or is he going to switch it full-time, or what's he going to do? And all of the reporters up there, myself included, were, like, very in on this thought. But Mike McCarthy would never practice any of this when the media was allowed there, because he thought, oh, you know, we're going to really catch Seattle by surprise. And it turned into a bunch of nonsense. Like, it was like a one-game thing for 12 snaps, and it was, you know, you overthought it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of times, do what works for you. And really, I could draw a parallel to the Bucs and Mike Budenholzer and his system. And what I appreciate about him is they almost never, and you can hear it in the players, you can hear it in Budenholzer, they don't really care who they're playing. They do what they do, and they preach, like, hey, we're going to do what we do, and whoever we're playing against, they're going to have to adjust to us. I think there's a level of confidence in that, at least that comes across for me hearing it and seeing it. It's just, you know, do what you do, and if they can stop you, great. But, yeah, I've never been much for the, you know, hype, you know, secrecy and what a big reveal it was, because eventually if you're – it's only going to work for so long, and then you have to rest on how good you are at actually executing it. So I guess count me in maybe the more old-school camp with that regard.
Paul, good stuff, and we'll chat again later in the week, okay?
All right, cool. Thanks,
all right, buddy,
Paul.
Talk to you soon. There you go, Paul Emig. Paul Emig was joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard, they treat you fair. 80-plus, they've been getting it done. If you're looking for a good team to drive for, if you're looking for a team that wants to help you out as much as you want to help them out, that is our friends at Schneider. Call them 800-44-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com.